I'll ask anybody's question but yours, if you're an idiot.
My wife can score more than 2 buckets on 11 shots because I know my wife will at least shot fake one time.
I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
Welcome in, opening day, made for March, here on the Underdogs Podcast Network. Tyler Aki and Tim Leonard. Tim, this is great because we've been keeping up with college basketball all year long. We had our other podcast, and now we're joining Underdogs, and I'm super excited to talk college basketball with you as we head into March. And you can follow the show on Twitter, at Made4March. That's at Made, the number 4, March. We've got a lot of fun stuff for you on the show today. We're going to go through some of our title odds because, you know what, we got to kind of kick back into things here with college basketball. Yep. We're midway through February. This February might be the fastest month of my life. I'm not kidding when I say that because it has flown by. We're knocking on the door to John Rothstein losing his mind and having sleepless nights.
It's so
and
close.
So much is happening in college basketball, especially with football now on the back burners. This is the center of the universe. All-Star Weekend is in the past as well. But Tim, I just got to ask you, especially after last night.
Oh no.
How are you doing?
Yeah, and for those that don't know, UNC fan over here. So it's been a weird year to follow college hoops. I'm teetering a little bit, Tyler, after last night, after the loss to Notre Dame, which was, I think it's now like 6 games they've lost at the buzzer. I expect it now to be happening each and every night, but it's just they're finding new ways to lose. They're finding new ways to break my heart. After Duke, I thought it couldn't get worse. Virginia happened Saturday, and then basically the same thing against Notre Dame on Monday night. I text back and forth with my friends who are also UNC fans, and we're like, all right, brace yourself.
Those group chats have to be hopping.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's one way to put it, hopping. It wasn't very clean last night, as Roy Williams' press conference was not last night. I mean, when he's dropping F-bombs, that's when you know
right.
that things are off the hinges there. And what can he even say at this point? It's just, it's been a brutal, brutal year for UNC. But hey, in some ways, that's kind of embodied what college basketball has been this year. And I do think as March approaches here, and you're right, we're getting really close to March, this is going to be one of the more exciting March Madness is one of the more exciting tournaments to watch in recent memory. You might not have the quality of teams that we normally do or the star power, but that's going to lead to what everyone loves, which is the Cinderella stories and the upsets and all that good stuff.
Yeah, it could be very chaotic this year. So I you sent me that Roy Williams press conference last night. And first of all, if you haven't heard it, hilarious. We'll play it for you in a second. But to me, I think Coach K has used his inner devil to possess Roy Williams. I mean, Roy has gone off the hook this year, and rightfully so. I mean, it's frustrating. Did you see he held – there was – so they played Notre Dame last
yep.
night, and the latest edition of buzzer beaters UNC has lost on. And Muffet McGraw, who's
yeah,
the
that was
head
funny.
Coach of the women's basketball team at Notre Dame, a perennial powerhouse, kind of like the North Carolina of women's basketball, essentially. And they had like a mini support group picture and they're like, hey, Steve Kerr, we're missing you
right.
too. But I just thought that was really funny to see that on Twitter. But Roy Williams, dropping F-bombs.
I'm not going to freaking do that. We're going to freaking, excuse me. I apologize to everybody.
And I just can't believe it. I think Coach K has gotten to his inner demons and has possessed Roy Williams to this point where he's getting Roy to act unruly.
Yeah.
He's doing it. He's done it again.
Look, all throughout my life of watching college basketball, I grew up in North Carolina in the heart of kind of ACC country. That's why I'm a huge college hoops fan because you got Duke, you got NC State, you got UNC right there. Wake Forest is somewhere close off in the distance. No one really cares about them. But there's always the competition between the fan bases and I aligned myself with UNC because I had some family ties there. And for years, I've been able to look at NC State and laugh and joke about their fan base. But this year, it's like everything has been hitting me in the face because this is what it feels like to be an NC State fan. All these close losses, all these choking. I mean, it's like I'm getting what I deserve
for
all the years of crapping on NC State. And to be fair, NC State is still doing NC State things this year in a bad ACC when they had all the chances to kind of actually finally make it on the right side of the bubble and make the tournament. They had a good roster returning. So, and UNC still beat NC State, and they probably still will beat NC State because Roy Williams always beats NC State. But after they beat NC State, Cole Anthony came back, and now since Cole Anthony has returned, it's been six games, and they have not won a single game. 0-6 with Cole Anthony. I thought there was a sliver of hope after they beat NC State. You get Cole back, and they played well against Duke, as many people witnessed, but I mean, this season just has to end at this point because they're just writing new ways, new Hollywood endings to break my heart.
All right, well, enough of the teams that have zero chance to make it to the NCAA tournament. Let's talk about teams that not just have a chance to do that, but have a chance to cut down the nets in April in Atlanta. So I'm looking at the Bovada odds right now for the 2020 NCAA
title. I haven't
title.
Seen these, so.
All right. See.
Can I guess a couple?
So.
Maybe. I'm assuming. Yeah.
Who do you think has
I'm
the best
I'm assuming
odds?
It's Duke. I would say Duke and Kansas
it is not.
Are 1-2.
All right, so Kansas
okay.
is
and
1.
And that's just brand name.
2-3. Yeah. 2-3, Baylor-Gonzaga, 8-1. Kansas, 7-1. Duke checking in at 4th at 9-1. The undefeated San Diego State Aztecs, 12-1. Then you've got the Dayton Flyers, 14-1. How about that? Three of the top six in terms of odds right now, all mid-majors. Louisville also 14-1. Then you got Maryland, 15-1. Kentucky, 22-1. Auburn, 25-1. As is Michigan State. Seton Hall's 28-1. Florida State, 33-1. Oregon, 40-1. Penn State, 40-1. And then Nova, West Virginia, also at 40-1. Then everything else is way longer.
So
after that.
Two teams that I like there. Oregon 40-1 seems like pretty good value. I know they've been struggling lately, but we've kind of been on them throughout the year because they do have that closer in Peyton Pritchard. They have some tournament experience with Dana Altman there. It is the Pac-12, and I understand the reluctancy to bet on Oregon based on how they performed on the road this year. But the other team, and I was thinking about this the other day, what are Gonzaga's odds again?
8-1.
I don't know what it is, but it just kind of feels right that this would be the year that Gonzaga, who was arguably the best program in college basketball to not have won an NCAA tournament title, would win it this year. It just, because of all the craziness, it makes sense that a mid-major, quote-unquote mid-major, would win it. And Gonzaga right now, they've got the best offense in the country on KenPom, last I looked. They've got a top 40 defense. They're a very good three-point shooting team. They're pretty deep. And they have kind of debunked the trend of Gonzaga not performing in March lately. They're kind of due for the national title. And I just feel like it would be kind of fitting if a mid-major like a Gonzaga won this year when there's, as everyone keeps saying, not any great teams out there and not any blue bloods playing like they normally do.
Yeah, so I'm with you on the Oregon train. I really like that pick. I'm going to shy away a little bit from Gonzaga here because if amongst that crop of early favorites that I listed out, I kind of like Duke. I really do. Doesn't this feel like a Duke year? At
9-1
because I can see the whole narrative of, well, this team was way worse than last year's team, but this is the team that won. I see that narrative popping up in April, and I just think they're just all around solid. That's what I see in Duke this year. Just all around solid team. And, you know, it's funny. I just teased into these title odds by talking about North Carolina not having a chance. They're at 85-1.
They're listed?
Which is better odds than LSU,
what?
BYU, Florida, Indiana, Memphis, St. Mary. I mean, they're on this list ahead of teams that are actually going to make the tournament.
That's blasphemy. I mean, I don't even understand how you could put them there. The only way they make the tournament is if they win the ACC tournament. And believe me, as someone who's followed them way too closely this year for the product they put out, they are not winning the ACC tournament unless somehow they play like they did against Duke for four straight games and actually close, because they've shown no signs of closing any games this year. We talked about UNC enough, though. That's ludicrous that they have odds.
Yeah, that's right. So I like the odds on Duke. I think they could really make a run this year. We both agree on Oregon. And then if I had to pick another one of those long shot type of teams, just kind of looking at the list, I mean, Seton Hall kind of piques my interest at 20-1.
They kind of have that Carmelo type player with Miles Powell.
Right, and Miles Powell. Florida State at 33-1. They're a good 3-point and free throw shooting. Like, they're just an overall good shooting team. They can disrupt you with their length and stuff like that too. Florida State is also super deep, so they're good at playing a lot of games in a short amount of time.
I feel like Florida State, though, is the example of this year, a team that any other year would probably be borderline top 25 based on the skill level, based on how they performed when you watch them, the eye test.
But you can say that about a lot of teams this
so
year.
I guess,
in fact, you may say it about the champion this
right.
year.
I mean, there's only two or three teams right now that I watch each game and I say they would be a top five, top 10 team in other years of college basketball. And that's just the nature of it. And that's why everyone is predicting all this madness. It kind of worries me a little bit that everyone's saying, wow, March is going to be so crazy this year. Everything points to that. And what we've seen this year and the volatility of games, all these teams losing, all these ranked teams losing. But I get worried once I hear everyone on one side of the picture. I hope that it is madness, but I also do not want to see too much craziness to the point where a Final Four is got no one seeds or an 8-10 and a, you know, something right. ludicrous like we saw in 2006 when George Mason made it. At least that year, a team like Florida won. If you give me something where it's like a Cinderella story, but we still crown a pretty good champion, that would be ideal.
So I'm looking through some of the other ones here. I sneaky kind of like Louisville too, 14-1.
Yeah, they're kind of reeling right now.
Yeah, they are. But you know, you get hot at the right time. You still have that star power at the top. Although we have kind of said that Jordan Wara has struggled when they need him most at times, and you're gonna have a lot of do or die games now.
It's crazy, someone who was ACC preseason player of the year, and a lot of people thought going into last week was ACC player of the year. Now he didn't start against Clemson in a game they lost.
Right. All right, anything else you're taking away from these odds?
No, I do think Oregon, if you want a value play, the Oregon thing makes sense to me. They've got balance,
right.
They've got veteran leadership. They've also won a lot of close games this year, which on one side of the coin, you could say that's a little, you could be a little skeptical of them and that maybe their record is better than they indicate because they've eked out a ton of overtime games, kind of like Auburn this year. But the fact that they've won those close games on the other side of the coin.
Yeah, the
right,
battle test.
I mean, Peyton Pritchard has been there. Yeah. A lot of guys on that team have been there and executed with winning plays down the stretch, especially at home, but even a little bit on the road, you think of that Washington game. I think they're the value play right now. Now, they might not enter with a seed higher than 4 or 5 at this point based on how they've been playing lately, but I do think they have the pieces there to make a run.
You know, you kind of shot this idea at me the other day. Isn't it crazy how much turnover we've seen in the rankings in the past 7 weeks?
It's ludicrous.
I mean, so we've got the longest tenured AP number one right now, active at the number one spot. And it's Baylor, who, remember, they overtook Gonzaga despite the fact that Gonzaga did not lose that week. And in fact, their average margin of victory was almost 30 points for the week, and they still dropped to number two. But regardless, so Baylor 7 weeks ago was at 7. A couple of the other interesting ones to throw out there, Ohio State has, even though they're number 25 now, they were number 2 at the time 7 weeks ago at Christmas. Then they were last in the Big Ten, or tied for last in the Big Ten for a while.
Michigan was high up there too. That, similar Big Ten.
Yep, Michigan was kind of fresh off that Atlantis run where they went from unranked to like top 10. Then you have Memphis, who was ninth at the time, despite the fact that they did not have James Wiseman.
We thought Wiseman was going to come back. Now Memphis, they're not going to make the tournament at this rate. I mean, they're next four out.
Yeah, they're in the next four out. San Diego State was 15th. They're the only unbeaten left now. You've got Virginia, who was 16th and looks absolutely awful. They're a bubble team again this year. No, I shouldn't say again this year, but they're a bubble team this year. And then you've got Washington, who is 21st in the country and is now the worst team.
And that's as of Christmas Day. So 7 weeks ago, right. Washington has gone from ranked, a team that we both really liked, and a coach in Mike Hopkins, who's had success there at Washington, brought in Isaiah Stewart, who it's a shame that Isaiah Stewart's and even Jaden McDaniels, two potential lottery picks, two top 10 freshmen in this year's class, are not going to make the tournament. And that's something that we've kind of talked about a lot is the lack of star power. And we'll get to kind of the player of the year race here in a second in the Wooden Award Final 20 here. But there's only one freshman on the Wooden 20, and it's Anthony Edwards. There's no Zion this year, as we all know. But not only that, there's not even like, I'm trying to think of a player that's the tier below Zion as a freshman. But there's not even any of that, it feels
from
like.
From last year? Yeah, I mean, there's not even like an RJ.
Right.
Or, I guess I could say there's a Kobe White, but his name's Cole Anthony and he's not going to play in the tournament.
And James Wiseman maybe could have been, I don't know, someone like a Jabari Parker level good, probably a little bit better. Jabari Parker, though, it's underrated how good he was in college based on what he's done in the NBA now. But now Wiseman's done. He's not even playing regardless of whether Memphis makes it or not. Obviously, Isaiah Stewart is up there, but Washington is the worst team in the Pac-12 right now, so they're not going to make it. There's a lot of these players.
Vernon Carey, I guess, is the guy who is the best blend of talent and skill and also can lead his team to a national championship.
He's freshman player of the year right now, but he's 25th in mock drafts that I'm seeing or in that range.
Right. And that's more of a product of what the NBA is as opposed to his actual talent.
Yeah, and I just can't, for me, Carey, he's lacking a little bit of that it factor, and I know we talked about this where he doesn't have the highlight-type plays. It's a very old-school game. He's only playing like 24, 25 minutes a game. He gets in foul trouble a lot. He doesn't really play great defense, and I think that's why NBA scouts are a little hesitant to put him inside the lottery in these mock drafts, is because how will his defense translate to the next level? Will he be able to switch on a guard and stay with him? That's the big question mark around his NBA sort of stock. But you're right. I mean, Carey is freshman player of the year. I probably should be more in on him. But the point is, with these lack of stars, lack of quality teams, it does feel like we're not getting as many regular season games that are top 10 matchups, or even think about Big Monday. Like last night was Notre Dame versus North Carolina on Big Monday. And right. I used to, I mean, I'm biased towards the ACC a little bit, granted, but I used to love Big Monday. There's not as much appeal to Big Monday because it's typically ACC games and it's typically a team that's barely ranked, or you know, it might be one of those three good teams in Florida State, Duke, Louisville, but if it's outside of that, it's just a bad basketball game this year on Big Monday, which is weird.
Yeah, it's been frustrating. You know, you bring up Vernon Carey, and the thing that I'm super excited about in March is you're gonna get all the boomers who haven't been watching college basketball this year, and they're gonna watch Vernon Carey and be like, who's this guy? And they're gonna fall in love with Vernon Carey. Absolutely fall in love with him because he is your old school back to the basket big man.
He's turned back the time machine for sure. And it's a weird Duke team, but like you said, I do think Duke has potential in this crop of teams in this year's NCAA tournament to win it all. And I don't know, when's the last time Duke won it all? Was it Jabari Parker year?
It was,
or Trey Jones?
No, that was the year they lost. You're saying national championship?
Right.
It was, yeah, Jahlil Okafor and Tyus Jones.
I get them mixed up. But, yes, Tyus, Jahlil, that team. Then they lost the following year.
Grayson Allen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Justice Winslow. That was a good
team. That was a good team. And then they won in 2010, too. So they've had a couple here in this decade even alone, or I guess we've turned to a new decade, but in the last 10, 12 years. But I don't know. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if Duke was the team. That's why I thought their title odds would be a little bit higher, just based on the gravity of the Duke name a little bit, too.
Right. Yeah. No, but I really like them. They're not the most talented Duke team, but they get the job done. And this feels like a get the job done type of Duke team, especially when you've got Trey. Now, they're going to have to figure out
their
bench,
my concern,
a little bit. But as far as starters goes, they're as
good
as anyone
Jack White minutes
in the country.
That's all I'll say.
Yeah. Can we petition for that? Can we petition for that?
I just don't get it, Coach.
It's getting out of hand.
What's your affinity for Jack White? He's playing more minutes than, you know, some good players. Sometimes Alex O'Connell gives them a spark. Goldwire, I guess, gets solid minutes. But I will say they have not lost an ACC game with Wendell Moore and Cassius Stanley, basically their entire starting five healthy. So something to be said about the fact that Wendell Moore was out, and I think we kind of glossed over that a little bit. He's huge for them. He's an athletic guy that can score and play defense and guard multiple positions.
Yeah, I really like Wendell Moore. And, of course, he's got the moment for his tip-in this year against UNC, but that, I mean, he has been a real unsung hero, I feel like, on that team. And the injury hurt him when what was it, a broken hand, I think it was.
Yeah.
So he was out for five-ish weeks. But he's come back and he's made some impact plays. All right, enough about the polls, enough about the teams. It's time for the individuals. And Tim, we're going to debut a little segment here, all right? So with the Wendy's Wooden Award, and in honor of Bruce Pearl being on The Bachelor last night. First of all, all right, before we even introduce this segment, Bruce Pearl on The Bachelor. I know you're a big Bachelor guy. I haven't been in on it this year. I just, you know,
and this
it's
is my
whole thing
first
of
year really watching.
Oh, really?
It, so.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, it's been quite the season, I guess, to be opened up to it. And but yeah.
Yeah, I haven't gotten rave reviews about it. So here's my thing is I fall behind on it, okay?
Yeah.
And then I I go to my DVR, my Xfinity, and I see 2 hours is how long the, and it's like I'm not about to commit to watching a movie right now. It's just too long, and then I fall behind, and then now I'm way far behind, and it's a mess. And
to be fair, you could just go to a Hulu or something like that if you have a subscription to Hulu. No free ads here, but a Hulu has no ads.
Well, that's
or
still like an hour and a half,
it,
too.
You could skip through, I guess. Yeah, it's too long. I agree.
I can't commit to
and
that
to be
much.
Clear just, here, I would say my fandom of The Bachelor is, I think it's so bad, it's good. It's one of those where,
right?
And I'm not a
well. That's
a huge
all reality
fan,
TV. I love reality TV because I just find it absolutely hilarious, the staging of it all. But anyway, I digress. So Bruce Pearl's on The Bachelor. You watched it. I've only seen little clips on YouTube, but give us the little synopsis of what happened.
So basically,
spoiler alerts, by the way.
Right, The Bachelor is dating, or I guess he's dating 4 girls. That's the nutsiness of the premise of the show. But
you can do that at BYU.
It's true, very true. So one of the girls there's a connection. Madison is the girl that they did the hometown dates or whatever you call it, and they went to Auburn. And Madison's father is I think he's the director of basketball operations for Auburn. So he works closely with Bruce Pearl. And Bruce Pearl comes out as they're on the Auburn court. And first off, they had a little speech from Charles Barkley on the Jumbotron and obviously a can thing. And Barkley had a funny line or two and then did the War Eagle thing, signs off. But Bruce Pearl walks up and he's sweating a little bit, which I just laughed at because when have I ever seen Bruce Pearl not sweating? And I don't understand, like, why was he already sweating when he walked up? Was he nervous? Was he coming off a workout? So many questions unanswered. He walks up to about half court. He meets them. They start doing some basketball drills together, and he talks about how good of a man Madison's father is and did the classic coach line, which is, I didn't hire him because he was a great high school coach. That played a factor, but I hired him because he's a good man. And
this is the recruiting pitch he gives to everyone, too.
Yeah, probably, along with maybe some other gestures in the recruiting pitch. Maybe a couple $100 bills of sorts. But, yeah, that was Bruce Pearl's appearance on The Bachelor. I was expecting Bruce Pearl. It wasn't in the previous, but I figured they'd throw on a name. It was cool to see Barkley. And Auburn basketball, I think he dropped a line, too, about Madison's in the Final Four, and he was like, congrats on making it to 2 Final Fours in 1 year. So a subtle flex there from Bruce after finally making his first Final Four.
Love it, love it. So I started thinking, too, who are some of the other college basketball coaches I would want to see on The Bachelor? Just make little appearances like this. And I got out a list of 2 or 3 here. First of all, Tom Crean. Because he's just everyone's crazy father.
Yep.
Then you got...
I feel like Calipari would be good.
Calipari would be good. I thought about him for a bit. Jim Boeheim, I feel like, would be good. Because he's just got this dry, subtle sense of humor, too, that I think would be good. But then, number one...
There was a girl from Syracuse on The Bachelor.
Was there?
And,
this year?
Yeah, and I was joking with some of my buddies. Because, obviously, for those that don't know, I'm up in Syracuse right now. And... we were saying if that girl made it to
brutal hometown.
Yeah, like what would they do? Go to Wegmans and would Jim Boeheim pop up on the court? So that was a funny hypothetical because that'd be a tough hometown this time of year.
Yeah. Another one that I thought was Coach K. Because if you get a guy who's a big basketball fan, hey there. Hey. you like basketball? Kevin Durant? Yeah, let's give him a call.
Right. Yeah, that'd be good.
I got him in my phone. Kyrie? Well, let's give him a
call. Feel like if it was college football, Mike Leach would be great.
Oh, yeah, that's the classic.
So you need the characters. Bruce Pearl was probably on a short list, though, going in, and I guess he didn't really do anything too crazy, but it was pretty funny to see him on the show.
Yeah, you probably can't have Roy Williams on anymore because he's a liability to curse at any time.
Right.
Now.
And that potty mouth, Roy Williams.
Yeah.
Taking Dagom to new levels over there in Chapel Hill.
I apologize to everybody.
So anyway, the reason why we're doing this is because with our Player of the Year race for the Wendy's Wooden Award, we're going to give out who – we're going to cut the list, all right? So Wendy's and the Wooden Camp, you guys don't have to worry about doing this anymore. We'll cut the list for you. And we're going to do it Bachelor style. We're going to eliminate a couple guys every week. So be on the lookout for that. That's going to be every Monday from here until they announce the award on, what was it, April 10th?
Yeah. It's a little bit after the tournament or the final.
Okay. So, yeah, that's how we're going to do this. And so we've got the list. And what we're going to call this, in honor of it being the Wendy's Wooden Award, this is Baconator Bachelor. We're handing out Baconators to who's staying. And everyone else who's going home is going home hungry.
Yep. I like it.
All right.
Do you want me to – how are we going to do this? You want me to pick
we can go back and forth.
So this list is as of February 3rd. It's cut to 20 here on Wooden. You can go to the list on woodenaward.com. I'm looking at it now. First off, I will just say if I had to pick a player of the year right now, I'm going to Obi Toppin. We can kind of debate that later.
We'll discuss all those later. Yeah.
Okay. That's my guy for player of the year. But in terms of who I'm cutting, Sadiq Bey kind of sticks out for Villanova. And obviously, let me just preface this by saying all these players are very, very good at basketball. I'm not saying
– right.
But we know only one is going to win. And when it's at 20, you can kind of cut it down. I'd say Sadiq Bey for Villanova – he's only a sophomore. They don't like giving it to underclassmen. Villanova hasn't been good enough, I don't think, to warrant Bay being in the top 10 conversation. So I think we're safe to remove him. You agree with that?
Right, yeah. What are we giving him, like a Wendy's salad?
Yeah, I mean, if you're in the 20 range, you got to work your way up, to get to the Baconator. Yeah.
Right.
Wendy's salad's not bad, though, by the way.
Is it?
Yeah,
I never try salads at fast food restaurant. I just red flag for me.
Yeah, well, they're all red flags on the menu if you really want to. But
next
you continue.
we're going with Daniel Aturu, which is sad because I like Daniel Aturu.
Yeah.
Great player for Minnesota. But
recently added to the list.
Are they going to give it to a Minnesota sophomore center?
No.
No, they are not. And because of that, we are unfortunately cutting ties with Mr. Aturu. Take your salad and leave. Pack your bags.
So four players are not getting Wendy's Baconator salads here?
We've eliminated two.
Okay. I feel like we're on an underclassman kick here. Is Jalen Smith safe to eliminate from Maryland?
I'll allow it.
Okay. I see, Maryland is one of three teams on this list that have two players. And to me, especially after what Anthony Cowan did to Michigan State in crunch time over the weekend at Michigan State, if it's going to go to one Maryland player, it's safe to say it's going to Cowan. Jalen Smith went from off the list to back on. He's also only a sophomore. He's a good player, like all these guys, but I think we can eliminate him. He's not going to win.
Yep, I agree. Last one, who we're letting loose, it's Trey Jones.
Really? Yeah, I kind of agree. Same premise. It's
same
two
premise
players
here.
Yeah.
I think Vernon Carey's had the better season on this list. And Vernon Carey, I mean, he's just been the more dominant player in college basketball. We got to eliminate some of these guys who are doubling up because you're taking up too much space. So take your salad and leave, Trey Jones. Your brother can probably buy you a steak at the best steakhouse. So I don't think you're missing out on much here.
Yeah.
But Trey Jones, pack your bags and leave.
So four sophomores gone. I'm just looking at who has won the Wooden Award lately. And obviously there's a Wooden and there's a Naismith. Sometimes one gets both. Sometimes it's split. But last year, Zion, as a freshman, we know, won both. And he won the Wooden Award. Outside of that, underclassmen to win recently, you got Trey Burke in 2012-13 as a sophomore, Anthony Davis as a freshman the year before that, Blake Griffin as a sophomore in 08-09, and Bogut out of Utah was a sophomore in 04-05. So underclassmen don't win this award that much. It's been senior, 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 junior until Zion Williamson. And honestly, the junior was Jalen Brunson, who by all accounts was a senior. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he graduated too, right?
I don't know if he graduated, but it doesn't matter.
Right.
He was a senior. Okay, so we've eliminated four. I'll give you the list of who's remaining, who we did not cut. We've got Udoka Azubuike, Jared Butler out of Baylor, Vernon Carey, Anthony Cowan, Devon Dodson, Anthony Edwards, Malachi Flynn, Luka Garza, Marcus Howard, Jordan Wara, Philip Petrusev, Miles Powell, Peyton Pritchard, Lamar Stevens, Obi Toppin, and Cassius Winston. So that's who's left.
Cassius Winston he's teetering on.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say next week, but he's got to prove himself if he wants to get a Baconator next week and not be handed the salad, I guess, is what we're doing here. Because
right. He
was the favorite to win it going into the year. Obviously, he's dealt with a lot personally and off the court this year. Goes without being said. But I did think he was making a push at the start of Big Ten play. And as we know, often these awards are as your team goes, you kind of go, sometimes for better or worse. And right now, Michigan State is struggling. He's kind of struggling. And he's got to prove himself if he wants a Baconator next week.
Yeah. So I want to get your take. Who do you like for your player of the year right now?
So going against everything that I just said based on underclassmen, I do think Obi Toppin would be my pick to win it right now. First off, he's kind of had the player of the year type moments in Maui. I know he plays in the A-10, and that's what the case against him is going to be. But his numbers are off the charts in terms of efficiency. He's shooting 63%. He's shooting above 40% from beyond the arc. He's putting up 19-20 a night. He's very consistent. He's doing it all for that team. And the Flyers are a top five team in college basketball right now, something no one saw coming. So, yes, he came off the beaten path at the start of the year, which usually doesn't bode well for your case in terms of winning this national award. But I feel like Toppin, based on his efficiency numbers, his workload, everything that he's doing, and let's not forget the A-10 is not, I mean, compared to what the ACC is this year, and what some of these power conferences are this year, the A-10's not that far off. I know it's lesser competition, but I still think the numbers he's putting up, and he did it in Maui against good teams, that was his breakout campaign. He's hit some clutch shots. I think he's checked all the right boxes to this point.
Yeah, I mean, we love Obi. Love Obi. But I'm going to go with a different big guy who kind of does the same thing as Obi Toppin, and that's Luka Garza.
Yeah.
I mean, these numbers that he's putting up are absolutely absurd. Ever since the calendar's flipped to 2020, he's gone under 20 points just one time. Just one time. So you see all that, and I mean, where is this Iowa team without him? Remember, Iowa lost Jordan Bohannon right around New Year's too. Lost him for the season, and Luka Garza has stepped in. Ooh, that might have been a Freudian slip there. but Luka Garza has stepped in and just been that guy. He's third in the country in scoring as a big man. Like, you don't see that out of these guys.
His numbers are ridiculous.
This is a guards league, and you've got this guy who's almost 7 feet tall going out there and dominating every night, almost averaging a double-double of, he's got about 24 points and about 10 rebounds. And he's shooting almost 40% from three.
Yeah. Not to mention, the Big Ten has a lot of other very good big men. It's the best big men league we've seen in a while. So
yeah,
it's not like
Smith, Aturu, which is kind of ironic because we cut them both from the wooden.
Right.
From our wooden.
Like
bachelor,
Vernon Carey, you could make the case he's, with the exception of John Mooney for Notre Dame, kind of just beating up on some of these lower tier ACC players. Now, he did take it to Mooney over the weekend, so we got to give him some credit for that. But you can't make that case with Luka Garza. I mean, the Big Ten is producing a lot of good big men this year, and he's still putting up those numbers.
Right. And I just see what Luka Garza's doing. And I'm all in for the double Luka player of the year, right? Luka in college basketball winning the Naismith and I guess the Wooden too. And then Luka in the NBA. Give me a double dose of Luka for MVP and player of the year.
Yeah. Can you imagine what you would have said if at the start of the year I was like, yeah, come mid-February, even borderline late February now, I'm going to pick Obi Toppin from Dayton, who honestly, I maybe knew who he was. I mean, this is just being candid here. Luka Garza is going to be your pick for Iowa, who, again, I probably knew who he was, but he wasn't even on the All-Big Ten anything, first, second, third team, wasn't even remotely on the Vegas odds for National Player of the Year. Everyone thought Cassius Winston, maybe Cole Anthony, maybe James Wiseman. All those guys don't have a chance now unless Winston really goes nuts here in March or something like that. But it's wild that Luka Garza, a guy who, if we were to poll maybe the casual NBA fan, the casual sports fan, plenty of them probably don't know who Luka Garza is, unless you're living in that area or you're kind of a nerd of college basketball like we are. I mean, he's definitely gathered more national relevance, and it'd be kind of a shame if you didn't know who he is. But at the same time, it's not like he's a household name, and he has a very strong case to win it this year.
Right. I mean, he's going to run away with Big Ten Player of the Year, much like Obi Toppin is with A-10 Player of the Year, but it's, I mean, these are the guys. Now, let's look at, so who do you have at some of your, like, second and third options here for Player of the Year?
I would say Miles Powell is in the discussion. Seton Hall slipped up a little bit lately, but just based on how he's taken his game to kind of a new level this year, he's added more distributing, more passing. He's a little bit more unselfish, but also getting really, really strong numbers and a solid Big East. And the level of importance to his team was showcased when he was out of the lineup and was hurt. Now, maybe you take that into account and say, oh, he didn't play as many games, if that's a tiebreaker type of thing. But I think that's kind of crap because it's not like you can prevent an injury or you can predict that type of stuff, or that was really anyone's fault in doing so. So I would say Powell's in the discussion. Vernon Carey has an outside shot, based on what Duke does down the stretch here. The thing for me is he just doesn't really play enough minutes to warrant a top four, top five Naismith player of the year guy. I'm probably forgetting a couple others. I guess Miss Howard, but, you know, we've talked about how his numbers are sometimes a little bit deceiving. Dotson's in the discussion. And then we made the case for maybe if San Diego State runs the table, Malachi Flynn gets it kind of as default tiebreaker. You got to give it to the team that's undefeated.
The guy who has not lost, yeah. Flynn certainly in the conversation. So I've got Toppin at my number two.
Yeah.
Devon Dodson is right there for me. I mean, he's been a consistent force. He hasn't swung any chairs at people this year either. I mean, just the way that he's gone about everything and just been a leader for this Kansas team as just a sophomore. And I know we just kind of took a dump on sophomores.
But Toppin is too.
When we were giving them out. But I really do like what Dodson's done. And he's kind of been, I won't say the most valuable player amongst all these guys, but he's certainly up there. Howard, again, we kind of talk about how he'll have a lot of empty calorie games, and maybe he's taking away
the thing
from
is Marquette
some
good
of the
enough?
Other players on his team.
I don't think they are right now.
Like, Kansas is definitely good enough.
Yeah.
Iowa probably needs a little bit of a bump, but I think I kind of like Iowa to win the Big Ten this year.
It's going to be a
Vernon
good race.
Carey, Duke is good enough. Dayton is definitely good enough, so it'll be interesting.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a good race. That's the aspect of this that I like. It's probably not going to be a very memorable player of the year in terms of when we look back. If it does go to a Toppin.
Yeah, the guy who's going to win this year is not some NBA
guy. Toppin's probably the best NBA prospect. Outside of him, I mean, we're talking about second-round picks and Dotson, Howard, Powell, even Garza, Carey's a late first-round pick. All these names that we've mentioned. Jordan Wara, who I think is now out of the discussion after what happened last week. And just the fact that Wara hasn't taken a step up in his game, I think that's integral to win the award. You have to show improvement. And Wara, I think, is in the discussion based on sort of what he did last year and what the expectations were coming in. I wouldn't consider this year a failure for him, but he's just been inconsistent and hasn't really added another layer to his game, which in order to win an award as prestigious as this, you probably have to do.
And guess what? It could all be a wash in the end if Louisville wins it all.
So, yeah.
Which is certainly in the cards for this team. All right. Anything else you got that you want to talk about before we go?
I will say, speaking of Devon Dotson, Kansas-Baylor on Saturday, we'll probably record another podcast before that. And if we don't, that's a game to circle on the calendar. And also a game that has National Player of the Year relevancy for Devon Dotson's campaign.
Right.
Jared Butler is also a winning finalist, but that's going to decide the Big 12 in all likelihood. It's at Baylor after Baylor beat them at the Fog. Baylor has won 22 in a row right now, number one team in the country. If there's a game to watch that qualifies as some of those things that we were talking about maybe are a little bit lacking this year in terms of top five games, top 10 games, those big time regular season conference deciding games, that is a game. Baylor is, that's the biggest Baylor basketball game at home they've had, honestly, maybe ever. I mean, they've never gotten to number one, and I guess you could say some bigger games in the tournament for them, but in terms of a home game, playing against a team that's kind of your de facto rival this year in Kansas, that is going to be very exciting to watch. I will say, on Baylor's side of things, it's almost like they're a little underrated because they've won 22 in a row.
They just keep chugging along.
If they were named Duke, if they were named Kentucky, if they were named North Carolina, wouldn't we be putting them at the very tippy top of the Vegas odds for national title and saying, this is the quote-unquote great team this year, everyone else is playing for second? Because, and I guess you could say the same thing maybe about Gonzaga or San Diego State or Dayton as well, but I do feel like if Baylor was a bigger name, the only reluctancy to bet on them to win the title is not based on what they've done this year. It's based on they've never really been there and all the way to the Final Four.
Right. Yeah. Baylor, Kansas, Saturday. That's going to be a good one. You probably have to sign up for ESPN Plus, given what the Big 12 has been doing all year long.
Right.
But regardless, We thank you so much for checking us out today on the inaugural Made for March podcast. For Tim Leonard, I'm Tyler Aki. We'll talk soon.
I apologize to everybody.
The game was over.